At IDEA Public Schools, we're more than K-12 schools that are open to all students. We're dreamers. We're scholars. We're creators. We're leaders. We're the future. And our success starts now. Apply to attend IDEA Public Schools for the 2022-2023 school year by visiting ideapublicschools.org/apply.
Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Success Made to Last Legend Show. I'm Rick Tokini. This show is brought to you by Edward Jones Financial Advisors. We are so glad to have on today Jim Reeks, and we're going to be talking to Jim about a lot of things, including his backstory, origins of creativity for him. And without further ado, Jim, welcome to our show.
Hi, everyone.
Nice to have you on, sir. Hey, would you be so kind to tell us your backstory?
Yeah, that's, how long you got kind of a question. My main background is actually in music. I was interested in music and understanding and trying to learn how music works and understanding how to write it, what chords were. Basically I was classically trained as a composer. And then from there, I got interested in how I might be able to attach computers and technology to musical instruments and use those in writing music as a compositional tool. That got me into a whole bunch of other areas, and, one thing leads to another, and I end up at Apple.
Amazing. But you started as a composer. So at what age did you begin to have an interest in music?
No one in my family was a musician or had any interest in music, and I begged for my parents to buy me a piano.
Mm.
And I ended up with a piano, and in my small bedroom was a bright piano that took a while to get it in there. And I would close the door and begin learning how to play piano at the age of 8.
So were you self-taught, or did you actually have an instructor at some stage?
Yeah, it pretty much started out with teachers. I was always a bit frustrated with the teachers and how that went about. But I basically continued taking piano lessons all the way through, hard to guess, but at least to around the age of 13 or so. So maybe 5, maybe 7 years, I was still taking piano lessons. And then after that, I started picking up other instruments and teaching myself. Like I started learning how to play guitar. And then I figured out there's too many other guitar players. So then I started to play bass because I wanted to join a band. Mm-hmm. And so I taught myself how to play these instruments. But the piano was a great background because I could read and write music. I understood everything. And picking up an instrument was just a matter of developing the physical skill.
Absolutely. And so that ability, Jim, of being able to write original scores, How would you say that influenced your success at Apple?
Yeah, it's one of a few things. If you're referring to like some of the sound effects that I created, that was absolutely a part of it. And then getting into sound design while I was at the university and studying music composition, I discovered that they had an electronics music lab. And so I spent some time in there goofing around with synthesizers and sound design. And that was actually something I had been doing on my own because, again, technology and musical instruments and sound and composing. And I got really interested in music from bands like Tangerine Dream, if anybody remembers them, or even Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk happens to be a band that hip-hop artists sample all the time now. So I was really interested in synthesizers. So when I was in high school, I found a kit and built a synthesizer literally by soldering components onto circuit boards and wiring the whole thing together. Like I said, it's kind of a diverse background. It would take a long time to explain it all. But so I got interested in, again, adding electronic instruments and technologies into my so-called studio to try and figure out how to create sounds, whether they were melodies and music or even just literally creating the sound designs, you know, creating instruments.
Mm. You know that we consider you to be a legend of sonic identity, and there are only a few people that we consider in this world that are in your league, Jim. And
yeah,
we
no, I ended up stumbling into this where, like, trying to get a trademark on audio is extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a trademark, an audio trademark.
Mm. How did you achieve that?
Well, Apple's lawyers eventually filed for it, you know, more than a decade after I had created that sound. But the sound became, as I jokingly refer to, earconic. It was a very recognizable sound. It became, you know, very strongly branded with the Mac. And then the sound appeared in many locations. Like, there was a Simpsons episode where Lisa gets this idea about an app to write on a phone, and then she gets the little, you know, light bulb above her head, and then they play the Mac startup sound. Then in the movie WALL-E, when he has to shut down and recharge his batteries, when he eventually wakes up in the morning and reboots, it plays the Mac startup sound. So that sound became so recognizable that eventually Apple realized that they were going to have to protect it, I guess. And then they filed for the trademark and won. But like I said, getting an audio trademark is extremely rare. I think there's like a dozen. And, you know, 20th Century Fox, NBC, Intel. It's actually only three I can even name off the top of my head.
Yeah, it is truly amazing. I know that you are singularly one of the greats within the sonic industry, and I think it's crazy that perhaps we are recognizing you today as a legend. You need to write a book, my friend, about this whole experience if you haven't already, because I think the world needs to know what you know about the importance of music and sound. If nothing else, for all the hundreds of thousands of brand managers and 750,000 entrepreneurs starting their business to figure out why music and sound is so important, especially across every communication or social media touch point.
Yeah, so here's a couple of tidbits that I guess would be, you know, a couple of chapters out of this book I'll write someday. Brand is so misunderstood. So let me help explain that. It is so misunderstood. I meet marketing people all the time that have this confusion. There's a saying in philosophy, I guess you could call it a saying, confusing the map with the territory. And that's what a lot of marketing people are doing. They're confusing the symbol of something with the thing, right? I jokingly spin that as you're eating the menu instead of the meal, right?
Oh,
okay. So one is the symbol of the thing versus the thing. So the thing is the brand. A logo is the symbol of the brand. And people think of the two incorrectly. They'll think of the brand as the logo, but that's like confusing what a cowboy does when he burns a brand onto a cow's butt, right?
Right.
That's kind of where the brand term comes from, right? Literally branding, meaning I'm going to put my on this cow, right? So mm-hmm. People confuse brand this way. And here's the true definition of brand. It's the promise of your benefits. It's in the mind of the consumer. It's not the logo. The logo represents what's in the mind of the consumer. And as a marketing person, you're trying to put into that mind the promise of your benefits. Do you see the map versus territory or the menu versus the meal metaphor there?
Absolutely. That, and the emotional connection of that sound has got to make the big difference in delivering the promise of the benefit.
Yeah, or representing the promise or helping to convey or remind. Right. It's that symbol to that promise. And, you know, my sound couldn't have worked if there wasn't already a strong brand presence. The design issue for me was, what is the sound that I could create that would be a symbol, right? What would fit? What was fitting as a symbol to represent the brand? Because Apple already had a strong brand.
Righto, righto. And so when you came up with the sound of a camera, to
right.
me, that was a seminal moment, having worked for Eastman Kodak in the 1970s, because, Jim, with your genius, you took the place of a camera, and you probably killed a couple of camera companies in the industry. Because
well,
now all of a sudden...
That's another interesting one, because the original sound is my Canon AE-1. And I kept recording it, and I was slowing it down to get a slow enough shutter speed where it was clearly recognizable, right?
Right.
And I was doing this about early 90s, sometime like around 91 probably. And on the Mac, it was when you took the screenshot, because we didn't even have phones at that point. Mobile phones weren't even around, really. And putting good cameras on mobile phones, you know, was still another couple of decades away. But anyway, it was originally being designed for taking the screenshot, because when you took the screenshot, it was just a silent moment. Like, there was nothing that happened. It just, you know, there you go. Now you got a PNG file or a JPEG or whatever it was of the screen. And I said, that's a moment that it actually needs a sound. And it, to me, it was obvious. The sound would be a camera. What do they call that? Skeuomorphic, right? Skeuomorphism, where you know, use the physical sound, the actual sound of it. And so I added it, and then people got into this debate with me at Apple. They're like, that's not a modern camera. Modern cameras are, they have like power winders and stuff like this. And I'm like, but you're confusing what you think of as modern with what the world understands. I'm trying to convey a sound that everyone will, or at least most people will, recognize. And they kept arguing that's not the right sound. It should have been a power winder, blah, blah, blah. So at some point, somebody did try to record. They recorded their power winder and then tested it and found that people didn't recognize it, my classic AE-1 sound, right? And then after I was out of Apple, they ended up using my camera sound as the actual camera sound of the iPhone taking a photo. And I hear that sound all the time now. And I'm sure it's been stolen, and who knows, it's probably the same camera sound that you'll find on an Android or whatever, you know?
Probably so. Probably so. It's just genius.
And I hear it all
what
the time you... I'll watch movies, TV shows, and somebody takes a photo with their camera. Or even just other camera sounds. I'll hear my camera sound in all kinds of other contexts. It just seems to be the most recognizable camera sound now.
It is indeed. Hey, Jim, a question for you coming in from a chief marketing officer who's wants to ask you a question. Here it is. Why is it, in your opinion, that a simple sound of a brand can trigger emotional response and improve the perception of a brand?
Yeah, that gets back to what made me want to become a composer in the first place. I would hear some music and now ask all those same questions that this chief marketing officer just asked. How does that work? Why does it make me feel the way it feels, right, et cetera? Why does it make me think of things? What is it that I'm connecting to in my mind simply because I heard this sound? That's what made me want to become a composer. The answer is, you know, study composition and become a bit of a anthropologist and pay attention to culture, and you start to understand how that works. Now, most people are very visual, and there's a lot of language in people's minds and understanding, describing visual things. Few people have the language to talk about sound. And when you study music, you get that language. And now you have an ability to speak with other musicians that non-musicians will not understand. So it's a difficult thing to explain, but try to imagine this. You have never tasted salt. You have no idea what salty tastes like. And then I have to describe to you what salt tastes like. How could I do that? It's an experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
How could I ever explain that to you? The best I could do would be to say stuff like, or it's similar to, you know, I could only give you things that I might try and relate it to, but I can never actually give you that experience. The only way you actually get it is to actually taste it yourself. And then we try to have a conversation about it, but unless it's like, so your background is photography. We could talk about shutter speeds, exposures, film grain, resolution. You know, we have a rich language that we would be able to talk about that non-photographers would not get that. We would be like
That's
speaking
right.
French to. Yeah. Same thing with music. There's a language that we have that is, you know, familiar and workable with other musicians or sound designers, and it's just not there for the non-musician. It would be the best I could do would to try and give you metaphors and analogies and, you know. But it works because people are emotional beings and there are memories. And we connect certain things with those certain memories of our past, and in particular, emotional memories. And they remind us, they can take us back to that emotion. And composers or good sound designers will know what triggers those emotions in our past. And it's also very cultural. What will work for the majority of Americans in the U.S. will not work for an Aborigine in Australia, right?
It's so true.
But
a follow-up question.
You dig really deep, you know, dig really deep into something ancient.
Yeah, that's true. And your term of being an anthropologist, I think, is apropos here. A follow-up question on that, though, is there's this penchant for having a return on investment and following the metrics and seeing attribution of a dollar spent to some sort of return in sales. Only 2 out of 10 brands, to my recollection, from my days at Procter & Gamble, have any sound or sonic identity. If it's such a big deal, then why aren't more people attaching a sound to their brand?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, it's a fundamental challenge for marketing people because just like you said, we're always trying to attribute some direct result of I did X and then Y happened, because we're always trying to basically justify our existence, right? And it shows up as what's the ROI and all this and that. But in a sense, marketing is kind of like magic, you know. The sales guy gets the credit because, well, he collected the money. So there's a direct result right there. But in marketing, mm-hmm. we're always trying to figure out how can we connect, you know, the guy that gave us the money with the effort that I had put out. So that's just a fundamental marketing, you know, challenge. And then, give me the question again. And sound. I think it gets back to what I was saying about the sound problem of we just don't have the language for it. And in philosophy, again, back to, you know, there's so much background here for me. In philosophy, I came across the concept that I believe in is if you don't have a word for it, it doesn't exist.
Hmm.
And so in audio, you know, like as a musician or a sound designer, I'm trained and I have these words for it. And now I can see that. I can recognize it. It exists for me. It's real. I can speak of it. But back to like, how would I explain to you the taste of something that you've never tasted before? You don't have that experience. You literally don't have a word for it. That it doesn't mean anything to you. You could say the sound of that word, but it still has no meaning for you, right? And so I think it's like that. The people that are trying to do the branding and the marketing, they don't have this language. But it's one of those, when it works, it works. And then they'll struggle to explain that.
That's exactly right. We're talking with legendary Jim Reeks. And I've got two final questions for you, Jim, that we always ask legends. And the first question is, if you had a sound to your brand or to Jim Reeks walking on stage doing a TED Talk, what is the music that will be playing?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I think it's actually really, really similar to the whole Mac startup sound. That was very much a me moment.
Mm-hmm.
I very much connect to that sound, and it just resonates literally and figuratively for me. In fact, I've even said on my tombstone, I want there to be a button that you could press that would play that sound.
That is great. Beautiful. And the last question is, it's 2021. What is your definition of success?
Yeah, that's a really good one. It has a lot more to do with things that I didn't do when I was younger. Good friends, good food, experiencing other cultures, travel. You know, go places and actually live like the natives and experience other cultures and just the appreciation of the other people on the planet.
Wow. That's going to put you on the Living Seasonally podcast, because that's what that show is trying to accomplish. That's beautifully said. Jim, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And listen, I want to thank you on behalf of probably – thousands and thousands of marketers out there for the difference that you made and continue to make. And we really appreciate your wit and your wisdom and would love to have you back on again.
Oh, it would be great. I enjoyed this, and I love talking about this stuff. If I could ever show up and pretend to be smart, I'm all for it.
That's great. Jim, thanks again. That was Jim Reeks, and we appreciate him being on our Legend Show. We love the topic of sonic strategy and sonic identity, and he's truly one of the legends and the frontier people, we would call it, the pioneers of sonic strategy, having worked at Apple and had created so many things. And listen to anybody who chooses for their theme song the Mac startup sounds, then you know that they're in the thick of music and sonic strategy and sound and music that really, truly makes a difference in our lives. Hey, thanks to our sponsors of this show, Edward Jones Financial Advisors. Our particular financial advisor, you know him by now. His name is Serban Maracini. You can contact him at Serban Maracini. At edwardjones.com. He's a good one. He's a man of integrity, great advisor, and will provide you wonderful guidance for your particular financial goals as well. I'm Rick Tocchini. Thanks for joining us on today's show. As we always say, may you move from ordinary to extraordinary. Have a good week.
Depression hurts. Finding medication for it shouldn't. The GeneSight test uses your DNA to analyze how you may break down or respond to antidepressants using a simple cheek swab. The GeneSight test report can be used by your doctor to inform your treatment plan and may improve your chances of feeling like yourself again. You are not alone. Join over 1.5 million people who have taken the GeneSight test and get back on the road to recovery. Visit GeneSight.com for more information